So these three main financing methods are quite different, especially BA versus factoring and forfeiting. And BA, as we'll see, is also has a secondary market and is traded on the secondary market till the date of maturity. So banker's acceptance, which is also known as bill of exchange, it's a negotiable piece. It's kind of like a post-dated check where there is a commitment and a to pay a certain amount by a certain date. So there is a certain element of guarantee that this payment has to come. On the specified date, this payment will be made. So the way checks are certified, likewise, banker's acceptance is also very common, is also almost guaranteed and certified, and is a most common, is very common for international and especially large international trade transactions. Now, in the secondary market, banks and financial institutions trade these BAs, and the reason being that because there is the they are certified, almost certified like checks, because there is this guarantee, then there is a demand for these also. Obviously, when they are being traded, they will be traded a little bit below face value at a discount based on how much time has lapsed from the time that they were issued and to the maturity date. And they are considered relatively safe because there is, when on the due date, there is a contract that the payment has to be made. Now, what is factoring? When factoring is involved, then basically an exporter who has receivables which are going to come from sale decides to get a financial institution or a third party involved and sells its receivables to this factoring entity. So what happens is that I am the exporter, there is the factoring entity in the middle, and then there is the importer. Now, I don't know much about the importer. I want to do away with the risk of dealing directly with the importer. So I use the factoring services of, in India, for example, Axis Bank has a large factoring division, SBI Global Factoring Services, as I was telling you. I deal with an entity like this, or there are a lot of private entities. I deal with one of these entities, in which case I have an arrangement where the receivables arising out of my sale are being, these receivables are now being taken on by this forfeiting entity. So they are making a payment to me ahead of my importer making the payment to me, and they, this factoring entity is going to be the entity that is going to be chasing up with the importer for the payment. My headache as an exporter and my exposure as an exporter to the importer is then eliminated, and that is passed on to the factoring entity or company. So here there is, all of these documents are transferred. The factoring entity does its own analysis. I as an exporter may not have the ability or the knowledge or the skill set to understand the credit worthiness of the importer, to understand the reliability of the importer. There is the factoring entity being a professional expert in this arena, having its own knowledge, business, resources, has the ability to do this credit check on this importer. So based on that credit check, they are taking an exposure on this importer and taking that exposure off my hands, obviously for a commercial gain. Now the factor will make a decision based on credit worthiness, based on other terms, and how much of a commercial consideration should come in based on the their assessment of the importer, the terms, the tenor, and all of those things. That will impact the cost which is involved for the exporter for availing this factoring service. The factor would deposit about 70 to 80%, if not more, of the cash in the account of the client. Now, this is the first part of the payment. once the money is received from the importer or the buyer, then the balance payment is made to the client by the factoring entity. Now, when this balance payment is being made, when the full payment is received by the factoring entity, when the second part of the payment is being made, here is when the factoring entity will retain a service fee, which is their consideration for providing this, advance payment which they made of the 70-80%, and also pursuing with the buyer and the importer for receipt of this balance money. So taking this entire headache off the head of the exporter, and for that they are retaining their factoring fee, but that factoring fee is being retained when your full and final payment is coming from the importer. Now, factoring, the functions that a factoring entity are providing, of course, is the whole taking the headache of chasing the importer for the receivables, the ledger, the credit protection. In a way, it is also helping the working capital management of the exporter, because the exporter is not having to wait the entire term for a subsequent payment for 100% of the funds. 70-80% is coming to them in advance and the balance later. So the working capital management for your exporter is also that much more advantageous to him. And also in a lot of cases, what factoring entities do is that because they have more knowledge and expertise of the importer or the importing country or the region, that they come into effect not just for the financing part and not just for providing only the factoring financing support, but they also come in as advisors, helping to find helping the exporter to find newer clients, newer markets, newer counterparties. A lot of the factoring entities end up playing a dual, more meaningful role, where they also become advisors and provide advice from, in terms of what sort of terms to enter into, newer counterparties to locate, because obviously they have a larger network of counterparties and network in the importing country, or newer regions, advice on tapping into newer regions. So it becomes quite beneficial for the exporter. Different type of factoring, the terminologies that you might come across are race course, maturity, full factoring, disclosed undisclosed factoring, invoice discounting. So these are some of the technical names for the different kinds of factoring involved. Forfaiting is another form of trade finance, and here in a slight variation of what happens versus factoring, when it is forfaiting, then an exporter is finding a forfeiting entity. It is typically done when there are capital goods, large investments, large transactions involved, and they are going to the forfeiting entity and they are actually selling their receivables over a deferred period of time and at a discount. And typically forfeiting is done when the buyer insists that he wants to buy on credit terms. So there are the five parties are involved. There's the exporter, there's the importer, there's the exporter's bank, importer's bank, and the forfeiter in the middle. Now, forfeiter once again takes on the headache of chasing up for the payments, and is typically a bank or a financial firm that again has the expertise and the knowledge to figure out its credit worthiness of the counterparty, have the capital to, indulge in this activity. So the forfeiter is actually taking on the headache of running after and getting these receivables, and because they are getting it over a deferred period of time at a discounted rate, they have a commercial benefit for them also. Now, what does a fair forfeiture do? Like in factoring, forfeiture is taking on economic risk, country risk, exchange risk. All of these are coming onto the forfeiter's head, and he is assuming these risks versus the exporter. Now, as I was saying, that forfeiting is typically used when it is capital goods, when it is large transactions. You will see that the payment terms typically in forfeiting, if I was to give you an example of the US market, then when it comes to forfeiting, then typically in the US market, companies use forfeiting if their transactions are in excess of at least $100,000. So clearly forfeiting can't be used for smaller transactions for exporters. Also, forfeiting, the tenor involved for these receivable terms could be anything in these, again, in the example of the US markets that I'm giving to you, could be anything from 180 days to, 7 years. So all of these risks then go onto the head of the forfeiter. And for these, assuming the collection risk, the interest rates, the transfer risk, obviously there is the discount at which they are receiving the discount at which they are purchasing these receivables, and the fact that it is over a deferred period of time leads to a commercial benefit for the forfeiting entity. Now, importers bank, in this case, the forfeiters also have, typically with the importers bank typically guaranteeing this amount, that is something a forfeiter, an arrangement that a forfeiter gets into and assesses in terms of what sort of commercial consideration and whether they want to actually undertake this trade at all. So when an exporter decides that he might want to consider forfeiting as an option, he will typically approach the forfeiting entity, understand the terms on which the forfeiting entity is willing to offer them this service, also share with the forfeiting entity who their counterparty is, what are the details of the transaction, what is the time frame involved, all of those things, because only on the basis of that will the forfeiting entity decide whether or not to undertake this transaction. Forfeiting entity will indicate the fee it will charge for this forfeiting facility, and that fee the exporter will factor into its cost of the transaction. And then once he decides to go ahead and present this cost and the whole transaction to the importer, basis all of those things, the financial terms will be decided on. And now, typically, because there are capital goods involved, larger transactions, lot more risk, forfeiting fees are a little steep and, again, viable for larger transactions. Merits, of course, are that the risk of the exporter is completely eliminated. It's flexible. You have the forfeiter is actually taking on the credit assessment and the risk. So there is that ease of, ease for the exporter in terms of not having to take that headache of dealing with the counterparty. Demerits, some of the larger demerits is that forfeiting is very expensive. As I'm repeatedly saying that, it is for transactions over $100,000. So it is obviously for larger transactions. The fee is generally steep. So it becomes a slightly more expensive option for exporters to undertake. Some of the financing forms available in India are pre-shipment finance, like letters of credit, post-shipment finance, and import finance. Now, when we are talking about financing options, then also let's think about who are the entities that you would think of or deal with pertaining to being an exporter or an importer. Participating in this international trade. So these are typically the Indian entities that you would end up interacting with. Of course, Ministry of Commerce at a very macro key policy decision-making role. Then you have your export promotion councils across India to push various businesses. Export promotion councils assume a very important role. For example, when we talk about textile industry, and given that textile industry is such a large contributor of our exports and also such a large contributor to our employment generation in the country, then export promotion councils assume a very large importance. And for example, the Apparel Promotion Council, Apparel Export Promotion Council, is a very, very active body. Now, they started in 1978, and they just had they just had one office, and now they have 12 offices across the country, if not more. And they are very actively involved in helping their members to understand export updations, export requirements, give them access to lobby for them, represent them at international discussions, give them access to and invitations to international fairs, give them knowledge of and information about newer markets, newer requirements. So they are not playing simply quota monitoring body, or simply body which is doing some sort of administrative, playing some sort of administrative role, but they are playing a very proactive role in hand-holding the exporters in terms of helping them grow this business. So likewise, your engineering export promotion council is very, very active, and in 1955 we had given what our engineering goods exports were. Compared to that, now our engineering goods exports are in excess of 75 $80 billion. So this is a huge achievement and success for these export promotion councils, and clearly they have very proactively contributed to pushing exporters, especially smaller exporters, with not just marginal administrative roles like quota setting or monitoring or simple bureaucracy, but actually a very important advisory role when it comes to pushing exporters and helping exporters to upgrade their participation in international trade. Then, of course, the other entities which get involved and have significance are Reserve Bank of India. Then you have your various customs and excise entities. Then you have your export inspection agencies. You have your export and export import bank, EXIM, which is a fully owned subsidiary of the Government of India. So there are a lot of these entities that at macro and micro level get involved with when it comes to international trade. And once again, the role that export promotion councils play is very, very important across industries, and not just for a few industries. EXIM is one of the premier export finance institutions. As I said, it's a wholly owned subsidiary, fully owned by the Government of India. Commenced operation in 1982, and it has a very major role to play in terms of partnering with a wide range of entities for exports of product services, promoting cross-border trade, giving access to smaller entities so that they become a lot more viable and competitive, and can find their feet in terms of participating in international trade. So some of the flagship programs of Exim Bank are overseas investment finance, line of credit, which we were, we have earlier spoken of letters of credit. So giving line of credit to exporters, corporate banking, project exports. So across a variety of, areas, there are programs being fueled by Exim Bank and initiatives being taken by Exim Bank. And we have seen how our exports have grown. Now, especially in the post-pandemic scenario, keep in mind that entities like Exim had a larger role and, larger role to play, especially in post-pandemic scenario, because we saw how global trade was severely negatively impacted during the pandemic, and how, especially when it came to services exports and services trade world over, how services segment was negatively impacted. Now we have seen a resurgence, and at least services trade and services exports are back to at least pre-pandemic levels. And entities like Exim Bank have played a deeper role in helping this resurgence, because obviously a lot of the exporters, and especially the smaller exporters, were very adversely affected during the pandemic, and they would have needed definitely some sort of support from entities like Exim to find their feet again and to help them with favorable terms to try to overcome the downside that they faced during the pandemic years. So in the post-pandemic world also, the resurgence, especially for the smaller entities, has been pushed by very proactive roles by banks like Exim, specific to India. Now, some of the supporting institutional frameworks, as I said, are export promotion councils. I gave you the example of your April promotion, export promotion council, the example of the engineering goods councils. Now, these are registered as non-profit organizations, and they are not indulging in any production or export of goods and services themselves. But they are advising and enabling your exporters as an industry and guiding them. They are playing a guidance role in terms of helping them to promote their businesses, especially for smaller businesses. And they play a very important role in representing the industry to the Department of Commerce, to the government, to the RBI, etc., so that the individual players don't have to go and do this lobbying. Now, some of the functions over and above what I've mentioned for export promotion councils are also data, so that there is reliable data which is available at an industry level when it comes to accessing international trade fairs, etc. When we were talking about the Chinese market, China has a lot of very successful international trade fairs like the Canton Trade Fair. And to get, it would be very difficult for individual entities and individual traders, international traders in India, sitting in India, to get access to these trade fairs or to get access to other trade forums. So EPCs play a very important role then in sending trade delegations, also helping the local players, helping the international players of international trade in India to get access to these international forums, international fairs, opening their offices abroad, and guiding them. So they are playing a very important intermediary role, and also creating this element of trustworthiness and knowledge base based on their data and their studies, so that even when external players want to come into India and deal with India and understand a certain industry, then based on the knowledge bank of the export promotion councils, they get a very informed view of how it would be to do business for in that industry in India. Now, some of the other indicative functions are, to have cooperation with inspection council, also offering guidance for export opportunities. From time to time, there will be disputes, and if they can be resolved at an EPC level, then they don't have to be escalated, which would involve delays and also a lot of costs, etc. Transport issues, issues of issuing certificates, etc. These are also handled by EPCs. So overall, if you see, even at a government level, there are initiatives to push local exporters, to push trade, whether it is through Exim, whether it is through export promotion councils, whether it is through Department of Commerce taking significant initiatives. So there is a constant push to keep increasing our share in international trade and to make India a very attractive country and vibrant country when it comes to dealing with, and to ensure that this the historical, the legacy image that we had pre-liberalization and the license Raj and all of those things, that image is completely forgotten, and we are seen as a country which is progressive when it comes to international trade, international financing, advisory, and representation at an international platform. Thank you.